Don't wait to buy real estate and wait. If I had started in my 20s, life right now would be so much different. And if I'd invested $100,000, it would be like $3.2 million 30 years later, just by doing nothing.
Do you love your job, but want other investment options than your company's 401k and trying to pick stocks? If so, you've come to the right place. In this podcast, you will get actionable information for your passive real estate investment journey. Welcome back to another episode of Work Hard, Invest Harder podcast. Here's your host, Justin Dixon.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Work Hard, Invest Harder podcast. I am your host, Justin Dixon, and I'm super pumped to have Trevor Thompson on the show today. This is going to be really good for a lot of the passive investors out there. He started out his journey as a limited partner or passive investor and has gotten into over 20 deals in his first 5 years, seven of which have gone full cycle or have actually sold in that amount of time. And he's actually transitioned into being a full-time general partner, full-time investor in real estate across multiple asset classes. So we dig in real deep into how he started his journey, moving from a W-2 employee to a passive investor, and then a passive investor into a full-time active investor. It's a really good opportunity to learn from Trevor. He's here in Austin. So if you're here, he has some meetups, check him out. But yeah, let's get Trevor on the show. All right, Trevor, man, welcome to the pod. Glad to have you on.
I'm so excited to be here. It's really great.
Awesome. Well, let's talk a little bit about you. Give yourself a little bit of an intro and then we'll dig into some stuff.
Yeah, so I'm originally from Niagara Falls, Canada. Spent most of my life in the attractions and entertainment world. The last 20 years of my work was with iFly Indoor Skydiving, where I opened 46 of 80 locations all over the world. I started passively investing, and then since then have switched to actively investing. But I've invested in 20 syndications, seven have gone full cycle, so pretty active in lots of different asset classes. So it's been a great journey. I wish I'd started earlier.
Yeah, right. No, that's the biggest thing is like, I wish I knew back then what I knew now thing. So no, that's totally fair. Early part of your career, the massive part of it was fully focused on your W-2 job. Yeah. How did you get started in the passive space? How did you even get introduced to real estate? Obviously, yeah. I don't know if you were connected to it with your W-2 and opening up locations, but yeah, let's talk through that.
Yeah, so I was always fascinated with it and always thought I really wanted to get involved with it. I saw with iFly looking at real estate, doing real estate deals, was seeing it happen. I had a couple of partners in some other businesses that were very active in buying and selling real estate, but it just never all fit together. I was, like a lot of people, afraid of toilets, tenants, and trash.
Yep.
Then once I figured out, okay, it wasn't all toilets and tenants and trash, I went to the next excuse, which is no time, no money. Right. Yep. I don't have time. I don't have money. And it always ate at me that I needed to do it. Well, then iFly did get bought out by a private equity company. I got some money. I got killed on income taxes. Yeah. And I went, you've known for years that you need to have a second source of income. You need to have your money working for you, not you trading time for money. Why have you waited so long? So then literally I went to like five different weekends in a row where some of them were scam artists, right? Give us $50,000 and we'll show you how to buy an office building with no money down on your credit card. And I went, yeah, that doesn't quite sound right. And then I stumbled across apartment syndication and it was like, boom, the light bulbs just totally came on because I understood bringing value to an asset, right? With what I did in my work, we used to buy underperforming businesses all the time or buy out franchise locations. Apply good business principles, add a little bit of capital, add a little bit of know-how, increase the value. We called it EBITDA, which is the same as NOI, and it sold for a multiple thereof or its value was that. And it was like, I didn't get this. And I don't have to do all the work. I just have to find people that I know, like, and trust, give them the money. I'm investing in a real asset that is actually a business backed by a real asset. Mm-hmm. And they're going to implement improvements, which I understood. And that's going to grow my money. It was like, where did I not figure this out for the last 30 years of my life, let's say? And then I just literally, like, by the next weekend, I had my first passive investment. I had another one 3 weeks later. And I just kept going. And it was just mind-boggling that I didn't figure it out to that point because I always considered myself a fairly bright guy, but I just didn't get it.
Yeah. How long ago was it that you start?
5 years ago.
Oh, wow. Okay. That's not a long time horizon to have 20 deals and all that. So I guess, obviously, it sounds like once you had that forced moment of when they got bought out, was your job eliminated or what?
No, I was still with the company. I'd been repositioned already once. And so it was just a big liquidity moment for me. And when it happened, I just stuck it all in the stock market. And then I started pulling it out slowly but surely. Wish I'd have pulled it out a little quicker because March 20th, when COVID hit, I woke up in the morning and I still was probably two-thirds stock investment. Third of my net worth was gone overnight.
Yeah.
And then as it built up a little bit, I got out, right? And I wish so much I'd have gotten in and out earlier, but it is what it is. And now I'm about 90% of my investment money is in real estate. I still have some things outside of it.
Yeah, no, that's interesting. So how did you turn the tide, if you will, to going from W-2 employee and now it sounds like you're more actively participating in real estate. And you and I've met a couple of times. You're in Austin, so am I. So we've gone to some of your meetups. So I'm curious how that got started. And then let's talk a little about the transition then to Massive Capital.
Yeah. And my ultimate plan always was to be something in real estate at the end of my life. It was always like, even as a 20-year-old, at one point I thought of being like a commercial broker or a real estate agent. And I always had this thing and it was always out there someday. And then I started passively investing and then I started getting more and more involved in investing, to the point where work was getting in the way. And I was thinking of it. And in fact, I was going in one day to resign and they actually talked me out of resigning. And I didn't talk to them about I wanted to make a transition to something else. I just talked about my unhappiness and direction. Anyways, long story short, COVID made the decision for me. So a high touch visitor focused attraction business in the middle of COVID. And I was on the development side. They went from development to business survival. And they actually got rid of two-thirds of the company. And I saw some of the writing on the wall and I got a little more active. But it was also a tough time to enter real estate on the active side because there were so many people overpaying for buying assets. And I got super frustrated when I first got in. Like, I'd make offers and get laughed at almost because people were paying unrealistic amounts of money. They were clearly more experienced than me. But I just didn't give up. And even as a limited partner, I had a very unique opportunity where it was through my mentorship program. It was a deal that was in trouble. The asset manager had a life crisis and took a step back from it. And I volunteered. So I was a volunteer asset manager.
Okay.
And then, of course, that all snowballed. Well, I was helping an asset manager who got fired. Then they fired the property management company. And I found myself self-managing pretty big property at a pretty tough time. But again, none of it I regret because I learned so much. And once I got in, I just kept going more and more. And then on the active side, a lot of the mentor programs teach it that it's easy and it's not easy. And first of all, finding a deal that you could get on and that makes sense isn't easy and being part of a team. And then I got on a deal and spent about 6 months of my life to not be able to close the deal. We ended up losing some substantial risk money, total of $350,000, of which $75,000 was mine. Six months nonstop working on this deal. It was when loan assumptions first started happening and we had a pref equity in the middle and we could just never satisfy the lender. It was super frustrating. And then I got on another deal where I was more just raising capital and I was the boots in the ground part of their team because I lived closest to the asset in Corpus Christi. And that was back when things started falling apart with interest rates and we couldn't get the close done. And then luckily one came up right afterwards. So I had like 8 investors on one deal that went down to 6 and 4 of them followed me to my very loyal investors, built up a good rapport. And I got a small piece of a deal in Columbia, South Carolina with a group that I was doing a lot of work with and a lot of broker tours. And we were making offers. We were getting close, like second and third. But we stuck to our guns and didn't want to overpay as well. And so that was lucky. And then I got on another deal with someone who I'd been networking with a lot, and they've texted me and they said, I think I got one that's going to be perfect for us. And we managed to close November of last year. It was also a loan assumption, but we got it done.
Nice.
And I'm actually the asset manager on that. But it was a lot of work to get to the active side.
Yeah, and I want to talk a little about the entry point into the passive space, but we're going to take a quick sponsor break, but stay tuned because we're going to talk about the passive side on how you got started in that. So we'll be right back.
Whether you're in a job you love or hate, building a financial foundation is important. This foundation can support you by providing passive income, stability in an uncertain economy, or the launching pad for you to start your own business. Great Venture Capital helps busy professionals invest in commercial real estate to build passive income streams, grow wealth, and take advantage of tax benefits. If you'd like to learn more, check us out at greatventurecapital.com or send an email to justin@greatventurecapital.com.
All right, we are back on the Work Hard, Invest Harder podcast with Trevor Thompson. So before the break, you talked about some of your transitions from the passive side through your active days up to present date. And I want to take a little bit of a step back into your first passive deal, because a lot of the people that listen to this podcast are maybe where you were, in the sense that they're working a W-2, they've got most of their net worth in the stock market or their company 401k, and they want other options, right? And so maybe they've got some cash that they're just sitting on and they want to put it into a different investment vehicle. Yeah. Obviously, you took 5 weekends in a row, it sounds like, and went to different mastermind groups or conferences. Talk about that first investment, that first deal that you did, and how did you get comfortable turning over money, right? Because you're not given $1,000, right? It tends to be a fairly significant amount of capital, typically 50 to 100 grand, depending on the deal. So step us through a little bit of that thought process of, you knew that it was a good investment. How did you just get comfortable with that person to know, and trust them enough to give them some capital?
Yeah. So I was fortunate that it was some folks that I'd met through my mentoring program. These were the ones teaching me, and I wasn't just learning from them. Once I get involved in something, I'm a bit obsessive. So I was absorbing everything I could. I was going to so many things. I was listening to books. I was going to podcasts. I was connecting with people. And I'm not going to lie, the night before I pushed send on the money button, I didn't sleep so good.
Yeah.
Then when I finally did it, I went, I'm in. And it was like, wow. And then literally, I started looking for my second one, because I joined this group in October. And by the end of the year, I'd already made 2 investments.
Got it.
And then I started getting updates and I started learning more. And then I just started doubling down. I wanted not all my eggs in one basket. So I wanted to find some other people that I knew, liked, and trust as well to put my money with them. I spent almost a year investigating some people, like going to their webinars, learning about them, following up with people. And I'll be honest, the one I spent a year looking at to date has been my best investment. And I hardly even looked at my second investment with them. I mean, I knew enough what to do. But when somebody triples your money in 20 months, it builds a lot of credibility.
Totally.
It's in the same market. And they'd already had a couple of deals that had gotten going in between that wasn't liquid enough to invest in. So it was made it pretty easy. And the only thing that slowed me down is I wanted a little bit of diversification. So for example, that investment I just talked about, it was my first out of the state of Texas. It was in Arizona, Tucson. And then my first GP deal was Columbia, South Carolina. And I wanted to get in the Carolinas. Now I have a passive investment also in North Carolina. And I also started looking at different asset classes. So I quickly made a retail investment because that was a space I knew and understood. My timing was a little off, closing March 15th, 2020. But at the end of the day, they've done a decent job. They've managed to switch out most of the tenants to triple net leases. They've paid a 5% cash on cash, which, all things considered, in that space, I feel pretty good. And so most of my focus still is multifamily. But as I mentioned, I have retail, I have a medical center investment, and then I have a new build storage. And part of my philosophy as I got going, the first few deals, I call them, I was trying to get a home run, right? They were deep value add, right? So if you do well, just like the one I told you, triple your money in 20 months, normally double your money in 5 months. And then I started thinking a little bit differently. So for example, the medical one I invested in, it's only a 10% prep, no upside.
Okay.
But I look at that as a single. And so I kept thinking to myself, okay, if I can get a single, I can get a double and I can get a couple of home runs. And yes, I have had one strikeout where I didn't do well. But on the overall, by balancing out a little bit between asset classes, sponsors, and timing, I've done pretty good.
Yeah, it's just like anything in the world, like you want to diversify your portfolio, whether it's diversifying it amongst a bunch of stocks, which everybody talks about. You're diversifying amongst sponsors, asset classes in real estate, location. I'm a big firm believer. I've got deals in Arizona, Texas, Kansas City, North Carolina, Florida, right? So we're diversified amongst the different assets. Now, I'm all minor in multifamily, but that's not something I'm actually looking at this year, is looking at different asset classes within the real estate space. Because sometimes of a market cycle, different asset classes are better, right? Right now, value add, if you are on a variable rate debt and your interest rate went through the roof and you didn't have a rate cap, you're probably not doing as well. And maybe you're not paying distributions, right? But if you're in short-term rentals, a lot of short-term rental people I talk to are still cash flowing, right? But to your point, you hit a couple of singles that keeps your cash flow coming in, that keeps everything humming. Yeah. And then you take a couple of swings at home runs with some of these deeper value adds or things like that. So as you think about your life cycle of real estate investing, now you're in Massive Capital. Talk a little bit about why you joined Massive Capital, what Massive Capital is, I guess, so people in the audience that may or may not know about it. And then how your goal, you mentioned, is kind of help 1,000 people reach financial independence through real estate. So that's like four questions I think I asked in a row, but like, let's just step through that and then we can kind of unpack a few other things.
Yeah. So oddly enough, one of the main partners of Massive Capital is the guy I made my first two passive investments with. And he was actually my mentor. He took a break. He had a family situation. And then he came back. And when he came back, we were actually making offers on apartments together. He was more the analytical side. I was the one visiting the properties and doing the things. We didn't win, but we were making offers and we started talking more. And then we got to a deal that was bigger than us. We couldn't do it just between the two of us. So he said, well, I started working with this guy named Sharar. Let's see if he'll join us on the deal. And I'd never met him, but it turns out his partner is another friend of mine from the same mentoring program for 5 years. And he gave us both like the 5-star rating for each other and we made a deal. And then there's another gentleman I met a few years ago that's also part of my mentoring. And so they're all now the main guys of Massive, and they've only been in existence for about a year.
Okay.
But I started watching them, you know, and they got to $100 million worth of assets under management in a year, which is pretty significant.
Yeah.
I knew the players already. About summer of last year, I started supporting them more, going to their events, talking with them more. And then in November, they said, well, how would you like to join up with us? We're wanting to really double down and grow our group. There was a couple of options of ways to get involved. And the one I chose is all in. So I am not an employee of Massive Capital, but I'm fully aligned with them. So my goal is basically, hey, you guys got deal flow. You've got all the systems and things that I need. I've got some skill sets, some connections, network that you need. Let's work out an arrangement. And the concept of it is, if I get a deal right, and I'm on my San Antonio deal, right? There's five partners. We all got a slice of, I call it probably a cantaloupe, right? And with Massive, I'm going to get a grape, but I'm going to get it 10 times this year. So I'll get a smaller piece of more deals. I also get some deal variety because they're doing lots of different deal types.
Got it.
And it just made sense, instead of being this lone wolf guy doing one-off partnerships, to just work with a team. So just to give you an indication, so far this year, and we're like mid-April, they've underwritten 200 deals, put out 40 LOIs. Most of them got laughed at, right? Because they just, hey, we're going to put one out. And
you need to put offers out right now, especially because there's still a delta between what sellers are expecting from a price perspective and maybe what brokers are telling them they can get and what it actually pencils to in the high interest rate environment that we're in. You said about San Antonio. I just saw a headline or an email come out about, I like San Antonio a lot. I think it's a great market, but their rents have been pretty flat, right? And so they're not seeing the rent increases that they were seeing last year. And so you can't really underwrite a 10% increase, because I've talked to a number of property managers down there and they're actually reducing rents on some class B plus assets because they're just not getting the rent. So yeah, I think there is still a gap between what sellers are willing to accept and what reality potentially is.
And the beauty is that before I was so hungry, I kept getting disappointed, right?
Yeah.
And now I'm with a group that is, it's an all numbers game, right? So we're okay to put 40 LOIs out on two, and they took a lot of time doing 200 deals. And they explained to the broker they're way off the whisper price, but this is what the deal does. And then they have a philosophy too. Well, that's fine. Good luck. Have a nice day. And when it doesn't work out, call us. And I'll be honest, a couple of deals from 2 months ago, 3 months ago are coming back.
Yeah.
And they're a lot closer to our expectations. So I think it's very interesting. And at the end of the day, the worst thing you can do is overpay for a deal.
100%. Yeah, I lost out on a number of deals over the last few years in San Antonio, and one of which I just talked to the PM that's now managing it. And they essentially said that they're struggling and that seller may have to either recapitalize, bring in a new general partnership team, or have to sell at a fire sale. So I think you and I have talked a number of times in person and via email about San Antonio and missing out on deals, but I'd rather be in a position that we are, that either we didn't win, but we're not the ones holding the bag, right? Because if you overpaid, you may have some very upset investors and it hurts your reputation if you're not performing.
And we came out of this weird environment, right? In theory, compressed cap rates, lowest interest rates in a bazillion years. And what a lot of people don't realize, so I'm old enough to remember when my mortgage was 16%. I don't want to remember it again, but I've seen it. And what the problem was is 4, 5, 6 is normal. And we went from 2, 3, 4 to 7, 8, 9, 10, you know what I mean? In like 6 months. And so the whole system is upside down. And the beauty is if you can buy a deal that works at 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, a couple of years from now, when the world goes back a little more normalized, you're going to be in really good shape.
Yeah. I'm a firm believer that if you can find a deal in this market that pencils and works, it may be that home run that you're looking for, because to your point, odds are when you try to refi in 2 to 3 years, rates will be no higher than they are now, but likely lower, right? And typically you underwrite for an escalation in your interest rate when you refi. And now I wouldn't underwrite a de-escalation, but I would definitely underwrite flat at this moment. So I'm curious about Massive Capital a little bit. Is it a full ecosystem in the sense that you have underwriting teams? So you guys are actually buying the deals and then you're bringing in investors to actually fund it, right? Or are you also partnering with other operators that find deals and you're helping them raise capital? Is it both sides of the coin?
All sides of it. They're doing some deals themselves. Most of the deals are partner relationships where they were looking for deals. They found people that we've joined forces together and we've been able to do a deal. So a lot of them have been relationships. I refer to them as very opportunistic.
Yeah.
So they're more important is the who. Who am I going to do business with? Then let's look at the deal to see if they want to do business with you. Let's make sure the deal makes sense.
Right.
And then let's make sure, how do we realign our goals? And then how do we protect ourselves if you can't perform? Because they're not negotiating from a position of being powerless, right?
Yeah.
They're like, hey, you want to run it? Fine and dandy. Here's the metrics. And this is what happens if you don't meet the metrics. Someone else has to come in. They've also got some good connections with balance sheet and liquidity. And so that's also really been powerful, because sellers are looking for the surety of close.
Right.
And banks are too.
Yeah. Track record is very important.
Oddly enough, kind of the deals are less favorable and the banks are pickier, right? They used to be this net worth and this liquidity, and they're actually looking for more.
Yeah. So especially like if I found a deal myself, I couldn't close it myself, right? Because A, I don't have the liquidity experience, all that other fun stuff. So I would need a group or people that either I would have to cobble together myself, or I would go to somebody like a Massive Capital and say, hey, here's a deal that I have. I underwrote it. I think it's good. And you guys say, cool, let me come in and help you fill in the gaps that you don't have, which I think is really important. Because when I first got into the syndication world, I was all by myself, right? And I was like, what the heck do I do if I find a deal? I don't have the ability to take it.
It's like the dog chasing the car.
Yeah, exactly.
So I've been there.
Yeah. And I did similar to what you did. I found a group of people that I got to know, like, and trust, and they had an ecosystem built that if you did find a deal, they had enough people, track record, capital in the group that we could comfortably take down most of those mid-market deals. So one thing I wanted to talk a little about that I think will be interesting to somebody that's getting into the passive investing space or even wants to be a little bit more active. You mentioned that you had 7 deals, I think, go full cycle, which means you bought them and they closed or they sold. Right. So maybe just give us, maybe not the one that was like the slam dunk, the tripled your money. Typically, we buy these deals if they're a value add on variable rate bridge debt, and then you refi in year 2 or 3, right? Yeah. Have you done any that have gone through the buy, refi, sell, or they?
I have not gone through a refi yet.
Well, maybe just talk about one that went through full cycle, and what did you experience as a limited partner from a cash flow perspective, from what they expected the returns to be? You don't have to give us brass tacks on numbers, but just curious if it overperformed, underperformed.
Quite interesting that most of them were what I'm going to call underperforming.
Okay.
And then had a good sale amount and did well.
You know,
so I had one and it was probably paying 3-4% cash on cash. They did have a 7 craft. They were going to hold it. Their goal was to do a refi. They ended up selling instead of doing a refi. And we got out at a 17% IRR. I was super happy. Now, chances are if they'd held it 2 more years, we would have got the same amount of money. And it would have been 11 or 12% IRR.
Right. So again, well, you probably sold it, what, 21, 22, right?
Sold at the end of last year.
Yeah.
Still sold it at a time when it wasn't quite as crazy as it is now. And then most of my deals are still in play. The ones that went full cycle, again, on average, I would say 5 of the 7 have done really well. One of the 7, unfortunately, has been a loss of capital.
So what ended up happening there? Did they explain what the reasoning was for that?
So it really boiled down to that it was a fire with an insurance claim with not enough money to rebuild. It's very frustrating, right? Because that's something that is definitely avoidable with good, strong asset manager, proper insurance. They just didn't have enough replacement cost insurance. And the fire wasn't over-encompassing, but it managed to get the entire property, which was small, condemned. So it was just like all these things started snowballing. Yeah. And then I do have a couple of deals that are on variable interest rates and they are up to their top of their rate payment, but they didn't have enough reserves to cover. So they've had to do a cash call to hold on. I participated in all the cash calls because I believe they'll hold on. If this is a blip, we'll normalize by 24, 25. We'll be able to get out. And again, we'll do okay.
Yeah, and what I've seen in some of the deals that have underperformed from a cash on cash perspective have still done fairly well from a total return, meaning that if you put in 50 grand and you're expected to double your money in 5 years, maybe you don't get 50 grand, but maybe you get 35, but it's in 3 years, right? So the IRR, to your point, is a good evaluator to level set what the deal return looked
like. And I've been a little bit creative. So one of my investments was on a land acquisition. And it was more like a hard money loan than a syndicated deal. It was a corporate-backed guarantee. And that one was a 16%, came to me as ordinary income, but that wasn't a problem to me because I had enough depreciation to cover the difference. And then I was in 2 other land entitlement deals. And one of them has completely finished, but they're moving asset over to another deal that they're doing with an estimated, like, much more substantial IRR payment. So they were just asking for a vote because it was self-dealing. They had an appraisal and they were selling it to themselves. They had to call a vote. And I voted yes because it's going to be a win. It won't conclude for a few more months. That's all.
Got it. And I guess as you think about, again, like you said, we're recording this mid-April 23. We already talked about we're both in the same camp of, we think if you can find a deal in this market, it should be a good one, theoretically. What areas are you/Massive Capital targeting as far as like maybe asset class that you guys are really bullish on right now? And maybe geography, where do you think the big pockets are? Because one thing we've seen really lately is insurance costs have gone through the roof in coastal towns. So I'm curious where you guys are targeting.
So right now, the last few deals we did are still about C-class value-add properties, right?
Yep.
The only difference is they're either a loan assumption or they've already got good fixed debt. So debt is already taken out of the solution.
Yeah.
They're definitely like they have a deal in definitely all of South Texas because of insurance rate is now just completely off the radar.
Yeah.
And the new space that they're looking at is buying new build from developers that don't want to lease up and operate.
Oh, got it. Okay.
It's a unique space for me because I've never looked at that space. And they bought one of their assets just outside of Dallas and it's 18 apartments and 6 retail stores. But they bought it off a developer. And the idea is it cash flows, doesn't make a lot of money, but when the leases all come up for renewals in 3 years, you get a couple of them signed up and you can sell the opportunity to the next guy.
Right. Got it. Makes sense. And last thing I wanted to touch on before we finish this out here, you mentioned in your bio that we'll share that you want to help 1,000 people. Talk about that. How did you get to 1,000? Like, what does that mean? Obviously, it's a passion project for you and you've seen the power of real estate. So just talk through that a little bit.
Yeah. So it started out that I was going to have 100 people invest in my projects and it was all about me, right? So I was going to build up this database. I was going to do deals and I was going to do 100 people. And then I refreshed myself with Grant Cardone's 10X. And when he talked about upping your game, and then I thought, well, I don't want to make it just about me. I want to appear in podcasts like this. I want to appear everywhere. And if you're connected with me on social media, you'll know I'm everywhere.
Yeah, you're really the master connector, everywhere. That's for sure.
And so I started thinking, and somebody told me I need to change it to 1,000,000 now. But my goal is if somebody gets the aha moment I got, and then starts passively investing. It doesn't have to be with me. It doesn't have to be with you. Hopefully someday it is with either of us. But if not, that they do it. Just they get it done. And we've changed their life. We've changed their trajectory. And we all know once we do it and we understand it, and we have success with it. I know they're going to share that message with somebody else, right? A relative, a coworker, or whatever, right? Again, when I tripled my money in 20 months, if I was still working, it would be the water cooler talk, right?
Right,
And someone would say, well, tell me about this. And we'd invite them to come to my meetup or whatever. So my goal is that people will get a light bulb turned on in their head. They'll make the decision to passively invest. They'll start to see the rewards of it. It will be life-changing for them. Again, I didn't start till my late 50s. Mm-hmm. And I tell you what, man, I have two things I always say. Don't wait to buy real estate and wait. Because if I had started in my 20s, life right now would be so much different, right? You start thinking of doubling your money every 5 years. And if I'd invested $100,000, it would be like $3.2 million 30 years later, just by doing nothing. And the other thing was I spent all of my life trading time for money. And the Warren Buffett statement, if you don't find a way to make money in your sleep, you'll work till you die.
Yeah.
And I did it. I lived that rat race. I did it. And I had nothing wrong with it. I don't actually ever encourage people to leave their W-2 job. What I encourage people to do is have their money work for them. They don't have to do their time to get money.
Yeah.
And again, if I had learned that lesson a lot earlier, because real estate isn't a get rich quick scheme, but it is how 90% of all millionaires became so.
Yeah. And that's how you protect wealth. You grow generational wealth. You have amazing tax benefits and all that. My aha moment was the Rich Dad Poor Dad book and puts a lot of people's. And to your point, I wish I would have known that 10 years earlier and things would have been a little bit different, but at least we found it.
Just get over the fear.
Oh, 100%.
Somebody get over the fear. Because again, I knew I needed to do it for years and I just couldn't trigger myself to do it.
I grew up in a middle-class family in a rural part of Pennsylvania. And our investment philosophy was work a job till you're 65 or 70, invest in your 401k and hope you have enough money to retire at that point. And there are other options. And now once you start to peel back the onion, you can identify that there are other ways to do things that you maybe weren't taught in school or by your parents or friends or whatever. So no, it's super fascinating once you get down the rabbit hole for sure. So I want to transition to the final three questions I ask everybody on the show. What's one piece of advice that got you started or helped you along your real estate investing journey?
It was somebody that just pushed me to finally pull the trigger and do it. In my mind, I already knew I needed to do it. And yes, it was a hard sales pitch, but boy, I'm so thankful I did it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so thankful I did it and that they pushed me past that point.
Got it. Yeah, that's totally fair. What's your favorite business book that you're into right now?
Yeah, so obviously my overall book is Grant Cardone's 10X. Mm-hmm. Got to listen to it on Audible and got to follow it up with Be Obsessed or Be Average. And if you're looking just to passively invest, James Kamasamy's Passive Investing. And if you're looking to be active, Joe Fairless, best syndication book ever.
Got it. No, three books. Appreciate that. That's awesome. So let's talk about if you hit your financial freedom number, meaning you could live an amazing life just off your passive investments, what would you do?
I think I'd continue doing what I'm doing because I love it. It's very bizarre. Like, you know, people say, oh, I'm going to sit on the beach and drink. And I couldn't do it. I'd rather jump in the ocean. So for me, it's being able to do what I'm doing. It's being able to help other people do what I'm doing. And I think I would like to be in a position where I can help other people that are younger than me to achieve their dreams, right? By being the KP on their deal or being the sponsor on their deal. Because again, that's just going to grow. Then it will be a million people, right? If I can do that.
Yeah, because one will touch another and another. So it's going to be a trickle down. Trevor, this has been awesome. I really appreciate you being on the pod. This is great. Next one we'll have to do in person because we live in the same city. So
it's crazy. Yeah.
Yeah. Appreciate you being on, man. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. I enjoyed it. Thank you so much.
Awesome. I hope everybody took something away from this episode. I've got another one dropping soon, so keep listening. Thank you.
I hope you got value out of this episode of the Work Hard, Invest Harder podcast, your one-stop shop for education on how you can continue to work hard in your career and have different options to invest even harder. If you took anything away from this episode, please like and comment. I read every comment as it helps me serve you better. Make sure to subscribe and hit the notification bell. That way, you won't miss out on more valuable content. If you're watching this video, it means that you want to grow your passive real estate portfolio. The easiest way to do that is to join our investor club by heading to greatventurecapital.com/invest. The link is in the show notes. See you on the next episode.